You with Sonali.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatkar. Anna Buss is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy award-winning band Gets Up. Like us on facebook.com/RU with Sonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on twitter.com/RU with Sonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Tune in to KBOO on Thursday, December 31st at 8 p.m. for KBOO's New Year's Eve extravaganza. Join KBOO DJs as they bid 2020 goodbye and kick off the new year with positive vibes. You'll hear sets from Diablo, Top Dolla, Kabloom, and more. Again, that's KBOO's New Year's Eve extravaganza from Thursday, December 31st at 8 p.m. to Friday, January 1st at 5:30 a.m. Bring in the new year here with your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before. Never been done
in this country. In this country.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. Last week, we talked with Dr. Kim Rhodes, and we went into great detail about the impact the coronavirus has been having, the number of deaths throughout the United States, what we should be anticipating with the vaccines, and just how it's been a stressor, an unmitigated stressor for the society at large. One group of people who are often left out of this conversation and have been unduly impacted by the coronavirus are those who are locked behind the walls, those who are incarcerated. And there's been some very disturbing scenarios around this, especially here in Northern Cali, that we wanted to shed light on. It's very important. A lot of people have family and friends and loved ones who are behind walls. And the mistreatment that many are experiencing is unconscionable. As you know, earlier this year, we went out to San Quentin and we joined a number of folks who were protesting and bringing attention during the first wave of the pandemic. It was pretty spirited. and hopefully the points were made. But we also know that there was retaliation after that gathering, and so we don't want to let this situation go unaddressed. And so joining us are a number of people. One of them is a local organizer by the name of Courtney Morris. We also have Marie and Alice, who have loved ones or are very familiar with what is going on behind the walls. So let me start off with you, Courtney. You sent out a press release, blowing the whistle like Too Short, saying that there were some things that we absolutely needed to know. And on top of the situation where we saw that those who were incarcerated were not getting adequate treatment, there was also a waiver that people were being asked to sign, which I thought was just crazy. So can you enlighten our listeners on that? And then let's talk to Marie and Alice.
Absolutely. And thanks for having us. So I'm an organizer with No Justice Under Capitalism. And apart from being an agitational action block, we have also been assisting folks inside San Quentin file for their writs of habeas corpus for their release due to the concerning conditions around COVID in prisons. As a result of that, we had multiple incarcerated people send us photocopies of a CDCR form asking them to take liability for their own death in the case of COVID. It asked them that if they didn't want to be released, that they would initial acknowledging that their age put them at a higher risk of developing COVID complications, that one or more immunocompromisations put them at risk for developing COVID complications. And this was not done out of concern by CDCR. This was an incredibly coercive tactic that was implicated as a direct response to the Von Steich ruling that stipulated that San Quentin was found guilty of deliberate indifference in the outbreak at San Quentin that resulted in 28 deaths and over 2/3 of the incarcerated population developing COVID.
I didn't know with 28 deaths there.
Correct, to date. And also found them in violation of the Eighth Amendment, no cruel and unusual punishment. So a judge ordered that San Quentin House to depopulate by 50%. Now, of course, public outcry by the incarcerated community, by loved ones, by health experts and attorneys is that we want releases, not transfers. But of course, they will fight tooth and nail not to lose jobs and money the same way the police are fighting against defunding for transfers. So at a time when San Quentin had under 5 cases, they were trying to coerce incarcerated people into being transferred out by signing these waivers. So we really worked to expose that because we know the real reason is that they were forced to depopulate and this was one of their ways of doing so. But I do wanna highlight San Quentin had one of the lowest case numbers at that time, at a time when coronavirus is at its peak. There are currently 9,463 cases alone that have been introduced in the last 14 days. And we've reached 112 deaths as of yesterday. So we're really at the peak of the COVID.
Wait, 112 deaths at San Quentin?
Across the California state prison system.
Okay.
So currently the population, you know, 11% of our incarcerated community has COVID, and the outbreak is currently number one at CTF Soledad, where Don and Alice have loved ones.
Before I bring them in, let me just ask you this. When we were at one of the actions that you had at San Quentin, one of the things that was made known was that guards were deliberately or, you know, exposing themselves to folks that those who are incarcerated certainly weren't the carriers of this virus because they're inside. They don't hang out. They're not kicking it at parties. So it was folks who were coming in and not wearing the PPEs or any of that stuff. And that seemed to be a concern that not only was it coming in from the outside, but those who were incarcerated were being deliberately exposed, people being put into cells with people who already who had tested, et cetera, et cetera. Is that still continuing, or was that the result of that negligent ruling that you talked about? I mean, did that result in that ruling?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's ongoing. I mean, San Quentin's location in wealthy liberal Marin is certainly an exception. Most California state prisons are located in small conservative towns in red counties that voted for a president that's a science denier that didn't take the pandemic seriously. So when we think about who's working in these prisons, it's certainly people who have not taken seriously the pandemic. A report by the Office of the Inspector General that was released in October found that 23 of 35 prisons were routinely not donning masks and wearing PPE. And they also found that only one disciplinary action had been taken against the prison guard for not following COVID guidelines since the start of the pandemic. And that's important to note because they're threatening the incarcerated population with write-ups, which ultimately could affect their parole eligibility for not following their guidelines, although their guidelines are often chaotic. People are scared to move because they don't know where they're being thrown because it's not transparent. So at a time when the incarcerated population's parole ultimately could be on the line for write-ups for not following guidelines, they're not disciplining their own employees who are responsible for protecting human lives.
Right. And that's important to know. Let me bring in Marie and Alice. I'll start off with you, Marie. Both of you have loved ones that are incarcerated, and you already heard what we've been talking about so far. Marie, from your experience, what would you add that our audience needs to know? What's your experience been? What's been conveyed to you by your loved ones?
Well, to piggyback off of what Courtney said, most definitely they're not following protocol because within CDCR, there really is no protocol. They put it out to the public, what looks pretty to the public. But behind those walls, it's a whole different story. Our loved ones are being mistreated. They're not getting the proper medical care. When they ask for a new mask, they have to go through medical. Well, living this life and having loved ones incarcerated, we know that there is no medical care. You have to be manned down. So something as simple as a mask is like pulling teeth. You know, word is they're infecting these men and women on purpose. And like I tell everybody, whether you have a loved one incarcerated or not, get educated. Education is key because one way or another, the system affects you. And it could be your loved one incarcerated tomorrow. It's your tax dollars that are going to the system. You need to hold the state accountable. You need to hold CDCR accountable because just like she had mentioned, our loved ones aren't going anywhere. This was brought into the system. They haven't left. They haven't come back in. It is the staff. And Kathleen Allison can say, you know, put the fault on the COs, but she is head of CDCR. So it is on her hands to hold her staff accountable.
And what's her name again?
Kathleen Allison.
Okay.
And she's head of CDCR. And these men and women that work there are going back into the community. They're going back to their families. And not only is it our loved ones who are dying, it's the staff as well. I believe it's 13 staff members who have passed away. So, you know, if she doesn't care about our loved ones, she needs to care about her staff. But these are human beings. They deserve to be treated as such. They should have basic human rights. And they have recently put up tents at Soledad. So they haven't separated the sick from the healthy. They keep, you know, mingling them together. Nobody's going to get better when they're constantly around sick people. And I believe there's around 100 and something in the hospitals receiving care also. I want to also add to that, with our loved ones being sick on the inside, there is no communication. Or if there is, it's very minimal. We don't know how they're doing. We don't know, even know if they're still breathing. The only call that we're guaranteed is when they're dead. And that speaks volumes. Because if you have a loved one in the hospital and they're sick, and that hospital tells you you cannot know how they are or know where they're at or know how they're doing, that's going to tear you apart. So being on the outside and not knowing about their well-being, it's a struggle daily.
Right.
And these men are struggling too.
I was going to ask you, so visitation has been curtailed then, right?
Yes, since March.
Wow.
They've actually, per Kathleen Allison, have permitted one video chat. I won't say it's a visit because it's not. Per month, per 30 days, you're allowed one, and 30-minute video chat. But that hasn't even gone through. CTF was supposed to receive theirs last weekend, and because they're so sick and quarantined, they weren't allowed. But there's people that aren't sick, and they were still denied their video chat. And these men are looking forward to that. That's their lifeline right now, the family and friends.
Right. Let me bring in Alice. What do you want to add to this, and what's been your experience with this pandemic?
Good morning. I'm gonna briefly add to what Don said about the video chats that they added this weekend, last weekend on the 19th that they canceled because supposedly now everybody's quarantined, including those who have already been resolved from COVID. Unfortunately, myself, my husband doesn't qualify for them because now they're weaponizing COVID and saying, well, until you get COVID and are resolved for it, you do not qualify for video chats. So you're gonna put these men through the disciplinary action that they're receiving for having COVID in their institutions when they didn't bring it in. They're not receiving their canteen, they're not receiving their yard, they're not receiving their packages for something that they didn't do. And now in the middle of a pandemic, during the holidays, you're not gonna allow them to be able to see their family members through video for 30 minutes because they have kept themselves safe from a sickness that CDCR couldn't keep them safe from. So they're weaponizing it and using that against our loved ones. But again, my husband has not tested positive for COVID, but they brought in, he had to take a Sally, and they brought in someone who literally had just got out of a COVID wing, who was in quarantine, didn't even do the 14 days. They're doing about 7 to 10 days now and exposing him to COVID.
Wow.
Yes. And recently, they actually just turned the phones on in the wing, in the wings, I believe Saturday, the day of the protest. But prior to that, all the wings, their phones were off. So it's like they're holding them hostage from them being able to talk to family members and say, look, this is what's really going on in here. They don't want that information to get out. And that's, you know, all we are asking for. You know, we're not asking for more than they deserve, or they just deserve basic human rights. And mass release is important during this. Every prison in the state of California is over capacity. CTF alone is at 129%. These prisons need to go down under capacity of 100% in order to be able to fix the problem that we currently have.
What does CTF mean?
Correctional Training Facility.
Okay.
Which is a joke because they don't train there. You can call and it's like someone literally says, the warden picks someone, says, you get to be in charge today. Okay, you get to be in charge today because nothing is ran accurately. No one ever has an answer there. There's no transparency. There's no communication.
Right.
It's a joke. It's a joke. Our loved ones are a joke to them. And another thing I'm going to piggyback on that Courtney was talking about, we're 9 months into this pandemic, a pandemic that they're supposed to be prepared for. Why is it 9 months into this that now it was released that they are mandated to test because staff was refusing to test? How does that make sense? And if they don't, they'll get sent home without pay. 9 months in. I work for Beef Slaughter that has nothing to do with protecting and serving these men that I took an oath to serve. And I have to go once a week. I'm mandated to go. Now you're telling me these men and women who work for CDCR have not been mandated? That's baffling to me. It's ridiculous how we sit here and allow that, because that's my money. My taxpayer money is paying their wage.
There's a couple of things that I would like you, Marie, or Alice, or Courtney to weigh in on. Obviously, we do a lot of shows that focus on those who've been incarcerated, those who have formerly been incarcerated. And the one thing that they talk about is the importance of people being able to speak and communicate with their loved ones, that this is an essential part of rehabilitation, that I think somebody said these are the lifelines. If we have situations where, as you put, Alice, they're weaponizing this virus, you know, so it's like you can only get the video chat if you get the virus, but if you don't have the virus, then we're not going to give you the video chat. So it's almost like an incentive to go get the video, the coronavirus, so you can at least get the video. And we're talking about a society that insists that we take all these precautions, like don't travel, don't, you know, we're all staying home. Many of us are. We're making these sacrifices. So it would, one would think that that would be the very least that you would do, if for any reason, just to set an example. The second thing is, and this is where I also want you all to comment, because there's some people that get kind of highbrow. They're like, well, you know, you do the crime, do the time. They kind of take that position. But, you know, from the years that we've covered these things, sooner or later, people get out, folks. I don't know if you know this. People are going to be coming home. You know, so it's not, you know, you're thinking people are going to be gone forever. They do come home. And if they're coming home and they've been infected and they've had this, that can only spell catastrophe for many of our communities. And lastly, I would say, you know, because a lot of people think, well, that's not my community. There's a whole lot of folks from all these communities, from Marin to Los Altos to the deep East Oaklands to what have you. You know, talk to anybody that's dealing with the meth, you know, dynamic, and you'll see that there's a whole hell of a lot of people inside these walls that are eventually coming home. And so, God forbid if they've been infected, but I want to get your take on this and maybe correct if there was anything that was said that was wrong.
I'd like to mention something. Like you said, the community says, do the crime, do the time. So I'm going to correct the community. Let that time fit the crime. The reason that why these prisons are overpopulated, because of mass incarceration, over sentencing. You have people doing multiple life sentences, but it goes back to educating the community. There, people rehabilitate, people change, and they need to be given a chance to come home and be productive members of society. You have many youth offenders, you have many elderly, you have people in there for all kinds of offenses, but just like they've made a mistake, so have you, and we cannot hold that against them for the rest of their life. So let them go in there and do their time appropriately. Don't put them away for the rest of their life. You know, they deserve a second chance, just like everybody. They are human beings at the end of the day. Okay. That's how I feel about that.
Courtney, go ahead, Alice.
I'm going to piggyback on that. There's a lot of hate mongering in the community, and it you know, like Courtney added, a lot of these prisons are built in red little counties. And, you know, I can't even read the comments when news articles come out on Facebook and stuff, because there's a lot of social media wars. But like my husband said the other day, and he's so right, if the community trusts CDCR, I don't even add the R because there's no rehabilitation. But if they say, no, they do the time and you know, CDCR is doing their job and they're trusting that their taxpayer money is being used correctly, then CDCR rehabilitates. What are you scared of? What are you scared of? These men have done their time. They're so ready to come home to their families. My husband was 16 when he committed his crime. And I always say this, I would hate to be judged for who I was when I was 16, because I wasn't the nicest person in the world for the rest of my life. You know, it would be terrible. I would hate it. These men have been judged by a jury of their peers. They need to be sent home. Just because they committed a crime doesn't mean that they deserve to be treated worse than animals, because animals have more rights than them right now, and that's pretty sad.
Courtney, anything that you would add to any of this?
Yeah, I'd like to make a couple points. One being that, as Alice mentioned, this really is a human rights issue. So at this point, out of 90,000 plus incarcerated people, over one third of the whole prison population, has had coronavirus at this point, and over 11% currently have it. You can't social distance in a cell. You can't social distance in nine feet by 6 feet. You can't social distance at all. And so this really is a human rights issue. We have to get back to humanizing all people. And that starts first with incarcerated people. The media completely stigmatizes incarcerated people. We know that. We know that, and that's news media, that's Hollywood, that's everyone. And so it's really important to focus on the human rights aspects. It's really important to focus on the fact that public health experts have said that the only way to mitigate the virus and prevent future deaths is for mass releases of 50%. We are operating, on average, the prisons run at 120% capacity. And we are so far off of historically operating these prisons within their capacity. These are human rights issues. And as you mentioned, this is community transmission because incarcerated people are not giving themselves COVID. Employees are bringing it in. They're bringing it in from their families. They're bringing it in from their communities. They're spreading it within the prison from incarcerated person to employee who's walking back home to their family. 800 employees on any given day walk in and out of San Francisco County Jail. You have 30,000 roughly employees within the California State Prison System. So think how many people that is every day. They're responsible for limiting ICU beds in our communities, and we're peaking right now. So hell yeah, that is community transmission. We can't continue to look at prisons as just isolated places. And for the people who are quote unquote tough on crime because of Republican and Democratic establishment fear-mongering, chasing votes for so long, you know, as Don said, there's a sentence to fit a crime. And we have gone from, you know, a one to life sentence to now life without the possibility of parole. So actually not everybody does come home because they are faced with multiple sentences and civil deaths by incarceration. But the waiver that San Quentin was having folks sign, acknowledging their age, acknowledging their immunocompromisations, these are grandpas inside, grandmothers, aunts, uncles. A huge percentage of the prison population is our elderly. Out of the 112 deaths within the California State Prison System, the average age was 63. 77% of those people had disabilities. 71% are people of color. So people really need to come home. And on a personal note, I'm someone that's completely new to this work. I am a middle-class white person that grew up in Fremont, California, and just getting involved in this work and getting to know so many incarcerated people, formerly incarcerated people, and system-impacted families is really just furthers my understanding of how stigmatized this system is and how hard we collectively need to be involved in each other's liberation.
Appreciate that. As we close out, Marie, I'll start with you. Any last comments that you would give to our audience? Any marching orders or any additional insights that we should really take to heart?
I ask you to the community to please be open-minded, take a big step back in your own life, and really review what's going on and right in front of you. And like look deep into the system, into these families, these loved ones that are separated by the state and the prison system. It's a money maker. And I just want to add one thing. I just talked to a friend of mine the other day from LAC, Lancaster. And he said, Don, I'm just trying to make it out of here alive now. And that broke my heart. So I let that ring in the ears of the community that these are our loved ones and they're fighting for their lives and to come home safe and sound.
Appreciate that. Alice, any last comments from you or any marching orders for our listeners?
I think that Don hit it right where it needed to be. We need a lot more community support, and it's okay not, you know, to understand it. but we do this in the hopes that we can educate one person and make an impact on that one person. Also, I ask that people understand what really going on behind those walls, that these men don't ask for much. They just want their basic human rights, and that's it. They don't ever ask for more than what they deserve, because they already have a hard time dealing with the fact of the crime that they committed. So they just deserve basic human rights, and I'll leave it with that.
Okay, thank you, Alice. And Courtney, how do people get a hold of your organization?
Please follow us, No Justice Under Capitalism. We're on Instagram, we are on Facebook, and we are on Twitter at Under Capitalism. Join the coalition, show up for demonstrations, help us stop the genocide, and hold Governor Newsom accountable for mass releases now.
There you have it. Want to thank you all, Marie, Alice, and Courtney, for joining us this afternoon on Hard Knock Radio.
As they said,
all in this together, whether you like it or not. You know, we're all responsible for each other's well-being, and hopefully we can put pressure on those that oversee the incarcerated community and have them do the right thing, which is making sure that these men and women are treated humanely and get the care that they need and deserve. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Let's start this prayer by taking a deep breath in. Divine and perfect life. This life is what I choose to call God, and I'm just knowing it's an energetic beingness. It is a presence that exists in everything. It lives and breathes as divine expansion. It is greatness expanding into more and more greatness. It is high frequency energy of love, of ease, of peace. This God divine presence is working through us and as us. That I'm knowing that this is the life source energy that lives in each and every one of us, that lives in all life. Oh, I know that God divine is working through us. Oh, and I know that we are a giving people, that we are sharing and being a part of the collective consciousness of transformation. So I'm giving thanks for each and every one of us stepping up and stepping in to the beauty, to the love, to the truth, unfolding our wings, allowing the breath to fill up our bodies with the divine possibility. I'm giving thanks. I'm giving thanks for knowing that the source is within, that everything that I need is within me right now. I'm giving thanks for the opportunity to vision forward and see something different, to see my community life as being healthier and more loving and more connected. I'm giving thanks for the healing. And it's in this attitude of gratitude that I release this word. And so this word is grounded in truth and gratitude. This word is grounded in a knowingness and a faith. And so I'm releasing this word into that universal law, knowing it is done and complete and perfect. And so if this resonates with you in any type of way, please join me in grounding it by simply saying, and so it is. Yes.
Ha, hey, ho, 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 Hard Knock Radio, East, West, North, South, conectados, every set, every hood, barrio to barrio, y'all stand up, stay righteous, speaking to the thugs, one love, we know where y'all at, hot, brown buffalo, it's It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415's bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side, learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side.
I am so grateful for this opportunity to once again register my unwavering support for Mumia Abu-Jamal. He has played such a pivotal role in the processes of popular education that have led us to this critical juncture in what one might call the century and a half year old effort to acknowledge the structural and systemic character of racism and to take seriously demands for abolition, abolition of the death penalty, of prisons, of police. And so it is right and just that we should accelerate our efforts on this new terrain to finally free our brother comrade. Much attention has been focused on Philadelphia recently, from the elections to the police killing of Walter Wallace because he was experiencing a mental health crisis, to the arrest by federal agents of the teacher and community activist Anthony Smith. And we know that barely a week before his arrest, Philadelphia Magazine had applauded Anthony Smith's community service and his exceptional leadership. And all around the world, we have followed the work of Anthony Smith's organization, the Black Philadelphia Radical Collective, and many of us passionately support the 13 demands they have submitted. We know also that the City Council in Philadelphia recently offered an apology, an official apology for the 1955 bombing, which killed 11 MOVE members, including 5 children, and completely destroyed 61 homes. So I've been asked to briefly discuss Mumia's case in the context of the long history of political repression in this country, and in the context of the utilization of the criminal legal system to produce pretexts for incarcerating people who have chosen to develop radical resistance strategies in relation to racist state violence. Mumia is a relatively younger member of a generation of Black radical activists and intellectuals who have challenged the structural and systemic character of racism long before this recognition helped to accelerate efforts to reimagine some of our society's fundamental institutions. Because of our radical stances, we were targeted by the state. In many instances, the state demonized and railroaded countless numbers of Black radicals, some of us who were freed, but many of whom have been imprisoned for as many as 5 or 6 decades. Mumia was targeted by the Philadelphia police and COINTELPRO, beginning with his membership in the Black Panther Party. His declassified 500-page FBI file shows that the Philadelphia police, in consultation with COINTELPRO, for many years had tried to peg a crime on Mumia. We also know that at least 1/3 of the police involved in his case were jailed after it was discovered that they had systematically tampered with evidence in large numbers of cases across the city of Philadelphia. But I think that few people know that the investigation of the killing of Daniel Faulkner, the policeman whom Mumia is accused of killing, that this investigation was conducted not by the homicide unit of the Philadelphia Police Department, but by its civil defense unit, which was the local police arm of J. Edgar Hoover's COINTELPRO. In 1981, Mumia was sentenced to death, and from death row produced brilliant critiques of the prison industrial complex, mass incarceration, capital punishment, and other institutional consequences of racial capitalism. Many of us are aware of the fact that his widely circulated writings have helped to humanize people in prison and people on death row. Like many others of my age, I've been an active supporter of Mumia for many decades. And I've had the honor of speaking on his behalf at United Nations conferences and in other international venues when Mumia, for example, was declared an honorary citizen of Paris. The last person before him to receive that distinction was Pablo Picasso. I participated in that ceremony in Paris as his surrogate. Leonard Peltier, Mutulu Shakur, Russell Maroon Schultz, Ed Poindexter, Veronica Bowers, Romain Chip Fitzgerald, David Gilbert, and my former co-defendant, Rochelle McGee, are just a few of the US political prisoners who have spent the vast majority of their lives behind bars. And as we know, are currently the most vulnerable with respect to COVID-19. We've already heard about Russell Maroon Schultz's condition. And we've heard Greg Gonsalves emphasize the need for compassionate decarceration and abolitionist strategy. Thanks to international organizing efforts, Mumia is perhaps the most well-known political prisoner in the world. And these international efforts saved his life when he came dangerously close to execution in 1995. Mumia's case exemplifies the lengths to which the state will go to silence those who speak truth to power. And this is why the Fraternal Order of Police has been unrelenting in its attempt to silence him and his supporters. But now that structures of policing have finally been exposed for their systemic racism, and as we call for justice in the names of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd and Walter Wallace and so many others, and now that the city of Philadelphia has issued an official apology to MOVE, now is the time to accelerate our campaign to bring Mumia home. Let's not forget that Mumia's identification with MOVE and his empathetic reporting on the city's repression of MOVE rendered him a major target of the Rizzo administration. And as you've heard from Johanna and others, Lynn Washington, for example, his case is a riddle with violations, especially the concealing of exculpatory evidence. The concealing of the presence of Kenneth Freeman at the scene of the killing of Daniel Faulkner, although the prosecutor was aware of the fact that Freeman had been identified as the shooter by four witnesses. And the same night of the MOVE bombings, Kenneth Freeman was found dead in a parking lot, gagged and handcuffed. We know that there were clear violations in relation to the selection of the jury. 11 out of the prosecution's 14 peremptory challenges were used to eliminate Black jurors. And of course, this in itself, as has already been pointed out, supports the call for a new trial. The Supreme Court has ruled that the elimination of jurors on the basis of race is a major violation. And as Johanna and others have pointed out, newly discovered file boxes in the DA's office, which were there for 37 years or so, contain a list of potential jurors highlighting their race. And perhaps even more egregious are the instructional tapes that have that were produced by ADA Jack McMahon, who pointed out that educated Black people should not be selected to serve on the jury. But also, as he said, Blacks from the low income area are less likely to convict. And as a result, I'm quoting, "I don't want these people on your jury." And as he said, and it may appear that you're being racist or whatnot, but again, you're just being realistic. You're trying to win the case. So finally, the framing of Mumia and his incarceration are part of a larger story of structural racism and repression linked to global capitalism, linked to racial capitalism. Racism drives incarceration and infects policing all over the world, from Rio de Janeiro to Johannesburg, to London, to Paris. Here in the US, mass incarceration especially affects indigenous people and Black and Latinx communities. And I think we need to emphasize the fact that the very same forces that have driven the creation of the prison industrial complex are responsible for the fact that many people in other countries, in countries of the global South, have seen their home economies destroyed by capitalist incursions. They have no other choice than to flee. Thus, the borders and the walls and immigrant detention facilities are integrally linked to racist policing and the prison industrial complex. And I should point out that abolitionist strategies emphasize the connections of all of these institutions. And so finally, at a time when critiques of structural racism are gaining traction, and specifically its centrality to policing, we gather here to demand the release of Mumia Abu-Jamal and other political prisoners whose trials and sentences were irreparably influenced by their political beliefs and by their challenges to this very system.
Hard Knock Radio. Oh yeah, yeah. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
What does it mean to be sheltered in place if the place you sheltered in don't feel safe? And how do we become so qualified to judge and chastise and lose the ability to empathize with those who don't feel safe inside for whatever reason? You know, you sometimes ain't got the luxury of feeling safe at home when you ain't got a safe space to call your own. No privacy, no courtesy, no bed, nor peace of mind. You're grateful for a roof over your head, but that's not where everybody spends their time. So by this time, you're already mastered trying to stay out the way. And you already overheard chatter about not overextending your stay. And trying to find resources hard without a computer or Wi-Fi. Plus, employment opportunities are scarce and local businesses are boarded up. So you being honest with yourself, asking like, why try? And it's not that everybody who's outside right now is even trying to be selfish. You know, some don't even want to be outside. They're just trying to avoid the insult of being displaced inside. You see, there's a lot of uncomfortable going on. And despite what you see on your timeline, not everybody's dancing to the same song. You know, some are dancing to the tune of loneliness and some ain't dancing at all. Some have their phones glued to their face and some ain't got no phones at all. No homes at all, no clocks on the wall, no time at all, no TikTok, no selfies, no hashtags, no memes, no statuses with complaints about how much food they overate. You know, some are still trying to find a meal and some are still trying to find their meal. I saw a broken car glass on my run around the block today. I must got a lot running through my mind today. Probably an indicator that I need to be still and pray. But the fact is, we are all in this together. And the ones who judge and lead without love must not know no better. The world's lungs are under attack. And we're wasting precious breath on judgment, conspiracy theories about the government. Remember, we don't all have the same privilege when it comes on to access to information. And we're not all watching the same station. And after 10 years as an administrator in special education, I can tell you we all learn different. Matter of fact, it's time for a deep breath. It's time for a reset. Creatives, be gentle with yourselves. It's okay to take a break. Your value as a person is not defined by the art you create. Some of us are called to be light, and all of us are called to be salt. Preserve your well-being. Let love and kindness be your currency. Let Christ's compassion lead the way. And despite what economists say, empathy is the new wave, and it's the same as the old one too. It's all cyclical. And if you believe that money makes the world go round, then yeah, this standstill can be scary. But there are those of us who learn to speak without talking and move without walking. This is a journey to the inside. No more sweeping it under the rug. That rug is filled. And yes, the pain is present, but the love is real. So, today I'm gonna be patient with myself. The goal is to be present, not perfect. And parents, you don't have to be perfect. This ain't no normal homeschooling. Your children can feel the world's stress. And under such circumstances, no one learns their best. And you are doing your best. And might I add, a damn good job? And so are our essential workers too. And right now, I'm gonna say a special prayer for our social workers and educators too. And all the folks doing food accessibility work, I see you. Three black chefs in Meadowview, I see you. And I thank you from the abundance of my heart. And for our families with loved ones behind bars, I know this season is hard. So I don't want to offer any platitudes or throw any out of context scripture your way. And for those of us who've lost loved ones to the virus, we lament and pray. We are experiencing a collective grief to a scale none of us have ever seen before. Be gentle with yourselves. Do not harden your hearts. It may be Christ knocking at the door.
Dead on arrival, last breath, seen it out his body. His kid's mama made a speech, made me weak. His son broke down crying live on TV. Later on that day, see the man get shot at a traffic stop. White America, when will this madness stop? Same situation, black victim, white cop. Same scenario, 6 months later, case drop. I think it's all a part of plan to start a civil war. Then implement martial law, they knocking down our door. Happened in the ghetto mainly cause we poke. What make it worse is, man, it happened, man, before we grow. They say that all cops ain't bad, but I can't tell. Cause every time I turn around, they killing black men. It's a war outside, nobody safe from. Try to play with our minds, but we ain't dumb. It's a war outside, nobody safe from. Try to play with our minds, but we ain't dumb. Mr. Officer, Mr. Officer, death and jail the only thing they offer us. Mr. Officer, Mr. Officer, can't breathe, take these damn cuffs off us.
A gorilla get killed, these white folks sad. A black man get killed, ain't nobody mad. Choked Eric Garner out, he was selling seeds. Broke Freddie Gray back, yep, they sure did. Don't know what happened to Sandra, but man, it wasn't cool. Try to say suicide, I think we damn fools. Shot Oscar in the back, he was handcuffed. Didn't even give to me a time to put his hands up. And Jesse Williams told y'all, so what, you having bands? You still a nigga, even in the latest name brands. You pick cotton for the master as a chain man. Now you pick cotton for fashion, it's the same, man. So all you white folks that still say we all equal, I bet you wouldn't trade pigmentation with my people. Everybody wanna be a nigga till you gotta be a nigga. Until your son is the one dead from a trigger.
It's a war outside nobody's safe from. Try to play with our minds, but we ain't dumb. It's a war outside nobody's safe from. Try to play with our minds, but we ain't dumb. Mr. Officer, death and jail the only thing they offer us. Mr. Officer, can't breathe, take these damn cuffs off us. That new blacks been getting hung. Just with no iPhones recording with no Samsungs. Been castrating black men cause our d**k's bigger. Coward white boy still scared of niggas. Want us to chalk it up, want us to keep quiet. Laugh cause it's all we burn when we ride. Let's start hitting they communities and let's see what happens. Set fire to they brand new Benzes, Ferraris and mansions. I bet the National Guard be on the scene quick. Filthy white boys in badges, so we call them pigs. What got me hot is ain't no black cops speaking out. Could have been your son, could have been your daughter out there bleeding out. Tell me what good is having arms if you ain't reaching out. Tell me what good is having a tongue if you ain't speaking out. You see it's power in the people they don't speak about. You see the power in the people's muscles.
Hard Knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop, EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris Juwan Kim, yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone. The Bay Area zone, Hard Knock Radio, let's go. Big shout out to Need and Davey D. Yeah, right, feel me, yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though. Oakland stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble Big Night Wolves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on, check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't gone all in and ain't paid the cost for the fee? Ain't nothing they made, they beats trying to eat till they ready from the steel grave. Beef, say please. Maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Second piece to the lovers I made with a please. Hey, there's some shade on your name in the street. Let's go.
Real Talk Radio.
You and I are rocking with the best in the West.
West Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast.
Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Kukatonin 2020, a commemorative Kwanzaa Kentu Fest on Thursday, December 31st from 9